Off the Ball.
Home of Wednesday night rugby with Woody and Jerry.
On News Talk 106 to 108.
Okay, so we're talking rugby. It's Wednesday night rugby. Jerry Thorny, the Irish Time. Good evening to you.
Good evening, Jer.
Keith Wood, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
So the coaching ticket has come in for quite a bit of criticism this week. Andy Dunn on the show, very interesting on Monday night. Kind of feels like there's been a bit of an overreaction given some aspects of the performance, and he feels that a lot of it's very fixable, although he's not quite sure if the coaching ticket is actually going to fix it, the issues that he was talking about. But the reason I think there's been such a strong reaction and response to this is because the full team was out there. This is supposed to be the point where in the tournament, you know, you're suffering a lot of injuries and whatever, but actually Joe Schmidt's full team, capable of executing what his game plan is supposed to be, and they failed. And that's, I think, why people are like, hang on a second here, what's going on?
Yeah, okay. They failed in terms of the result, and in some levels of the performance they failed, not in all of them. They met a very good Welsh team. They met the best Welsh performance of the tournament so far, which happens. Away wins in the Six Nations are very hard to come by outside of Rome. Only England have done it in the last 2 years. I thought that in terms of the accuracy of the line-out, there were three lost line-outs. Obviously, that was significant. In terms of the precision of the handling, it wasn't always there. There was one defensive foul-up which led to the try, which was a huge momentum shift in the match. And Wales are very strong front-runners, particularly at home. But then they did very many things well to get themselves back into the game. And if Robbie Henshaw doesn't join that line-out more, or if he joins from a different angle, and it's worth repeating that it was his very good grubber kick that got them into that position in the first place, then there's another huge momentum shift if Ireland take the lead with 9 minutes to go. So, yeah, it came up short in a couple of aspects, but I'd rather take Gordon Darcy's view that we're not the All Blacks, and I do think there has been a slight overreaction, and I do think there'll be a more accurate and a very big performance from Ireland this Saturday.
Okay.
It's disappointing, no doubt about it. A team that beat South Africa, New Zealand and Australia coming into the tournament, you'd have liked to have seen in the title hunt going into the last weekend.
Yeah. Josh Mick got very prickly with Dave McIntyre's question, Keith, at the press conference afterwards about predictability in Ireland's attack, and he was like, oh, well, were we? I think it was pretty evident that we were quite predictable in attack, particularly when we were in the opposition's 22. So I don't know if he was prickly because it cut him close to the bone, or if he was just prickly because someone was questioning what the game plan was. But it seems as well that there is no distinctive Irish way of breaching the opposition's defence when we're in their 22.
Yeah, I don't know if that's necessarily true. I would have a few complaints of the reaction. I'd have a few complaints of how we played. You know, it was interesting. I spoke to Jerry. We met at the airport coming back the day afterwards, and I felt it was almost when people who were watching on the telly or even coming out of the ground, the Irish fans, it was almost as if it was watching something else. And I'm not saying that in that fashion. I was trying to call the game for the BBC, so you tend to call it not as a neutral, because I'm obviously shouting for Ireland, but you watch it in a fairly analytical fashion, and you're looking at the whole field, so you're seeing the field and the screen. I thought it was an incredible game of rugby, very compelling. There were mistakes on both sides, plenty of them actually, but the level of intensity that was shown in that game was jaw-dropping. And we've had a few of those games this year, and I actually think that that's beginning to take its toll somewhat. Some of the hits were just jarring beyond all belief, and there was a spate of play in the first half that literally was, you know, like you're grimacing watching it, no mind playing it. And I think that takes an awful lot out of the team. And my criticism for the first half, for what it was that we're still kicking into the corner. Now, I know you can kick into the corner and you have a great chance of scoring a try. You've also a great chance of getting a better and easier penalty. But these games are only ever won by very small margins for the most part. And I feel I'd rather kick, not everyone over the post, but take them select. Don't think that we should automatically be kicking into the corner. And that's one thing I'm not a huge fan of. I've said it before. And I feel at times that just for the want of two or three mistakes, we can get the game line break that we would get. But I felt we were struggling. And at times, some of the players struggled. Some of our set piece struggled. when that happens, we tend not to get into the position that we'd like to. And we do revert a little bit more to one-out runners. And I don't know if that's game plan or if that's players that are sore or shattered, tired, or...
Shouldn't you then take account for that? Like, you've got very strong players available on the bench. You haven't played that much money or that many minutes. Like, that's where starting Peter Mahoney in the game as opposed to having him on the bench, that's where you can get the benefit of that.
I think it's difficult. And it's funny because for a player who never wanted to go off and never thought the idea of sitting on a bench was something that I ever wanted to do, the game has changed to that point that I do think we need... and benefit from having Peter O'Mahony at times on the bench because we have a leader that ends out the game. And I think that's something that's very important. But I would rather see him play because I think our line-out performs much better. We have better options in the line-out when he plays a phenomenal vertical jump. He is a very fine line-out forward. And I think it makes it easier for us. And we have struggled a little bit. So there is merit in him being picked. I'm not saying that there isn't. And I'm not jumping up on the bandwagon of everybody saying change, change, change. And I do think we might benefit from some change, even if it is just down to the level of fatigue and for these back-to-back matches at the end. So it could be the point that there won't be a huge number of changes, but that a lot of these players may come on much sooner.
Sorry, go on. You're shaking your head there at the Peter Mahoney idea?
I'm just, there's so many issues here. Yes, they went up the corner for the first penalty. It was tight to the touchline, so I thought that was, you know, a viable option. If the lineouts won, who knows what might have happened. You know, Ireland won their lineouts in Chicago, won their lineouts against Australia, didn't win all their lineouts against New Zealand, and, you know, it's predicated on winning your lineout. CJ Stander just made an amazing gallop, and the ball was called on him. Toner's rarely beaten in the air. Wonder why he didn't call it himself. Although that being said, Alan Wynne-Jones, you've got to give great credit. He read Sean O'Brien's foot movement, saw him turn around to lift CJ Stander and went up in the air against him and won the ball. Alan Wynne-Jones is a class player. He then beat Toner in the air, so you've got to give credit to the opposition. We're not playing Taylor's dummies here. Ireland are playing a good Welsh side. Then they went to the corner again, won another penalty, and that was further infield, so they took their 3 points. Okay. As for Peter O'Mahony, like, it's now, you look back at the Australia game and they were 24-20 down and with a completely makeshift backline that had never been introduced together before. Remember the carnage of the first half and Joey Carby fullback, Kieran Marmion in the wing, whatever else. Peter O'Mahony came on as a sub. They get a line out at the corner after Zeebo shoots up and Michael Hooper nails him, and they get an attacking line out. They win the line out. They go through seven phases. First phase, one off runner, Ringrose. Second phase, one off runner, O'Mahony. Third phase, standard pick and go. It never went beyond the second receiver until, having gone through seven phases, they then went Murray skip pass to Zeebo, skip pass to Earls, try in the corner. Probably the try of the season, but it was predicated on very strong one off runners. The tactic has worked very well in the past, partly because in those instances, O'Mahony got over the gain line twice, and so did Tadhg Furlong, and so did Keane Healy. And that makes a hell of a difference. When you're running into Warburton and Tipperich in the form they're in, I think they made 41 tackles between them, and you're not getting over the gain line, it's more difficult.
The point is that the one-out runners are designed to set up the situation where they can then go wide.
Exactly.
But we weren't good enough with the one-out runners to allow us to go wide at the
exactly. Now, no doubt, and myself and Keith talked about this in length in the airport, I'm becoming more and more of his view that they are becoming very Johnny Sexton dependent, and an awful lot goes through him. They would probably benefit from a Simon Zeebo stepping in occasionally, or Jared Payne as an alternate playmaker. They certainly could vary the point of attack with, you know, tip on passes to the second receiver, passes out the back going around. But they tried a lot of that, Chair. They did try a lot of that. Now, where they came up a little bit short maybe was in the accuracy and the speed of those passes, but it began with them not getting over the gain line like they have done like they did in Chicago, like they did against Australia in the way I mentioned. And the strike plays didn't work as well as the one that worked so beautifully against the French to get them the 5 metre scrum from which they scored. But I don't think they were a million miles away.
No, not a million miles away. And I think we got a bit flat in the form. So we ended up taking the ball from a standing position. Against Wales, that just doesn't work. They go low, they double team, they did very, very well. We became a little bit narrow in attack and defence. And, you know, I felt we were under a huge amount of pressure. And the reason I talk about the goal kicking, and it's not to say that we should kick every goal. I'm not saying that either, but I do think we should mix that up somewhat. But I watched England then the day afterwards, whether it was obviously preordained. They took virtually every kick at goal for the first 50 minutes. Even when they were 24 points, 25 points up, they were still kicking at goal. And it keeps the board ticking over a little bit. And they took the opportunities. I just think we need to revisit that, as opposed to not kicking the corner. There's times when you absolutely should.
Yeah.
But not as a default setting, we'll automatically kick in the corner. And so that just puts a little bit of pressure on. But having said all of that, we were a mistake away from winning. And I don't think we were terrible.
Well,
I thought as a game, it was an extraordinary game.
Okay, I'll come back to you in a second. I just want to get Kevin here because there's been another goal.
I cannot interrupt Keith and Jerry. I'm sorry for interrupting here, but we've just seen another brilliant Monaco goal in this game. We've spoken about the crossing, and again, it's that man Mendy getting forward from the left side. Thomas Lemar, brilliant down the left-hand side, freed up Mendy, and he's just drilled it across, and he picked Fabinho out, who'd arrived from midfield, and he's just stroked it home. So Monaco 2-0 up, and as it stands, Monaco are going through, yeah.
Two shots on target, two goals, I think.
Is that right? But they've dominated. I think that's a sixth shot at goal, though, Joe. Right. So they're totally dominating the game.
They just need to get them more on target. And they're
yes.
Absolutely yeah. Having them. So 2-0 and they're going through as it stands. 5-5. But on away goals, Monaco would go through with half an hour gone. I just want to read this text. Carl in Dublin says, brutal offensively again. 9 points in total is abysmal. Dress it up how you want. A third failure in Test Rugby in a row.
Third failure in Test Rugby in a row.
I don't know about that.
They beat France 2 weeks before.
I think maybe he means away from home. I don't know.
Right, okay. No, for sure, a 60% return of possession and territory in the second half of the game and only 3 points to show for it is coming up short.
Yeah. What's that on? What's, like, why?
A variety of reasons. Like I said, if you vary the point of attack a bit more, but they did try to, just they weren't accurate enough in their passing. It was summed up by the move they came up with off the 5 metre scrum when, you know, Wayne Barnes told them to move the ball when the scrum was going well. And so they go the inside ball to Keith Earls, who slightly overruns it. That's a big mistake, unfortunately, in a Six Nations game. And Keith Earls, I thought, was probably Ireland's best runner. His footwork and agility in traffic off fairly static ball was quite extraordinary. But yeah, you know, that's where they came up short. You know, that was indicative of the lack of precision they showed, unfortunately, in the second half particularly. But that being said, they went back to their maul and, you know, they were nearly rumbling over to have a conversion to go in front with 9 minutes to go. Certainly, for sure, England scaled far greater heights. They hadn't been scaling these heights before, but as Keith's right, it almost looked like a different sport the next day with the precision of their lines of running and the accuracy of their passing from the word go to the end was... Yeah, it was the performance of the tournament and well ahead of what Ireland produced on Friday night, for sure. Yeah. But then again... You know, Ireland were up against a fantastic Welsh defensive effort, and you would not call what Scotland did a fantastic Scottish defensive effort.
No, Scotland were abysmal. They had no line speed. They didn't put England under any pressure.
They ball watched a bit too, Keith. It's easy in the cheap seats, but they did, didn't they?
Look, it's they went down there almost in the view that I thought they were beaten in the first 5 minutes because they had no line speed. And if you give George Ford any space at all, his ability to hit the right pass and unlock defence at the right time, and giving giving players like England have in spades in their back line, breaking through the over the game line, very, very easy for them. I thought Joseph was phenomenal. It was an incredibly different game. I don't think England have set a world record for the win, so these aren't mugs in any way, shape or form. Yet they've been underperforming heavily in this Six Nations, but underperforming and winning. And, they clicked perfectly. But I would not expect them to play at that standard. I would not expect Ireland to give them the opportunity to play at that standard.
Well, okay, so let's take that for granted, right? But we should expect England to play with at least the same defensive ferocity that Wales did. And... the mistakes that Ireland were making weren't made in a vacuum either. They were made because we came up against a very strong Welsh team. But that's the level that these big games are going to be decided on. And under that pressure, the Irish team scored 9 points across that game. Like,
Not good enough. We'll never win you a test match away from home on this day and age.
And it is the full team. Like, that's, you know, okay, so maybe Payne comes in, whatever, and like there's a few bits and pieces. But
no, it's 12 of the team that started in Chicago, yeah.
Yeah, and it's effectively, you'd be confident enough with that team going into almost any game. So where were the coaches' handprints on what was happening? Like, I guess that's the... If the philosophy is for us to be this team that breaks you physically and then wins the right to go wide or wins the right to be ultra creative over the course of a tournament like this and over the course of a World Cup, is that ultimately a flawed thing? Because if those collisions ultimately are all accumulating to this point where they're knackered with 10 minutes left to go, remember pre-game the narrative was that our fitness was going to be the one that saw the game out, and that certainly wasn't the case on last Friday night. So
I don't know, Jerry. I looked. It was from our vantage point. You could see the whole field. So kind of looking at a screen on one side and looking at the match on the other. There were different times in that game where both sets. Normally, you'd say both sets. The forwards were you know, sucking diesel, but actually, both sets of teams, both sets of players were wrecked. You could see it. Physically, they were shattered. There were some passages of play that just was, it was exacting a toll from the players, and you could see it. And that's why I'm saying it's quite hard to be as openly critical as a lot of the fans are. When I thought the players, I'd expected the players to come off earlier. I thought they looked wrecked on both sides. It was a phenomenal test game. But I would take your point that are we able to play that physical game? I would have said for an awful lot of it, yes. But I equally would say that Wales were phenomenal in the tackle, like genuinely phenomenal in it. And we kicked a lot of ball maybe to take away some of those collisions, and yet I still felt we kicked too many. And I know that the argument would come back, well, we kicked the ball, but we actually won a huge amount of balls in the air as well. And that's fine. They were kicked well and recovered well in a lot of occasions, but we weren't getting over the game line fully, or we weren't getting a score. We weren't getting to the point of where there was a proper line break. And it took a long time before Sander boshed somebody and went on the outside break for us to get a proper, genuine line break. And still it comes down to, I think, managing your resources. And this is the way that Joe Schmidt has dealt with it for a period of time. And expecting a level of accuracy at certain times. And our accuracy let us down. Our lineouts were poor. I think some of our handling at times was poor. You don't expect to see Sean O'Brien knock balls on Jamie Heaslip or Tyke Furlong. And we knocked a few on. You lose momentum in those instances. And I still think it just goes down to the fact we made one mistake. And I was, I have to say, stunned and impressed with Henshaw coming out and saying, listen, I didn't know that. Properly, that's my fault. Pretty amazing thing for a 23-year-old to go and do.
Yeah, I think everybody can forgive him, but I wonder if the mistake was made out of fatigue as well. Like, then
no,
that's pressure.
Desire. It was made out of desire. As Joe Schmidt said afterwards, sometimes you can try too hard. There was a chance there. You could see it inching towards the line. He's joined Mulls in the past for Connacht, for Leinster, for Ireland. Certainly I've seen him do it for Connacht, and certainly I've seen him do it for Ireland in the past. He's just normally coming straight into the back of the line out.
Yeah.
That's where the ball was. He went for it. If he gets his arm slightly around Rory Best from the left hand side,
he's fine.
We're talking tiny, tiny margins here. And it's 16-15 for Ireland with 9 minutes to go, possibly. Another huge momentum shift in the game was Wayne Barnes' decision to yellow card Johnny Sexton. Now, you could well see why he did it. It was very close to the line. But he had warned Wales before and afterwards of trapping players on the ground, looking for penalties. All I would say is that in a 10-4 penalty count, when that was Ireland's only penalty they conceded inside the 22, Wales conceded 5 penalties inside the 22.
Yeah.
3 at Rooks, 1 for bringing down a Maul. You know, you're... I thought he had a fantastic game. His communication was outstanding. He had a really, really good game. But that's a little bit unlucky that you give away one penalty to 22, you get a yellow card. The opposition give away 5 and they don't get one.
Yeah, I mean,
There's a difference between in the 22 and tacking out wide a yard from the line. And
one of the Welsh ones was exactly that, 5 yards outside the line from an attack out wide.
That was a forward on a pick and go that popped in over the top. I looked at it immediately and said, yellow card. And then you see it from the other side and you say, God, there's no way he can actually get out of there. But But our first original view was from Wayne Barron's side, and from that side, it looked like he had made certain that the ball wouldn't go out. And that's unfortunate. That's, you know, you could have gone either way and you could have argued either way.
Yeah, I mean, there is this weird coincidence of us losing games at Wayne Barron's referees, but maybe we just need to learn to deal with them a little bit better.
Yeah. It was a great tackle by Johnny Sexton.
Brilliant tackle.
It was a phenomenal tackle and needed to be made, and he made it really well. And you do want to slow the ball down, and then you want to get out of the way slowly. And it's difficult, and very, very difficult. Like, I would look at the game and just say, I'm still unbelievably frustrated with it. I still think that there is a lot more in this Irish team. And you wonder if, just by the few mistakes that were made, and there were a few, there was Paddy Jackson coming out of the line, the missed lineouts, there's...
The drop balls you were mentioning earlier, and
you say without those we'd win. Yeah, that's fine, but we just can't afford to be making those.
Yeah, so I don't like. I still feel like the Welsh had it in them to get down the field after we'd scored. You know,
could have been one of those tit for tat end games that we've had in Cardiff over the years. Yeah. I remember a couple of them.
I don't think
you score drop goal one end, we score drop goal the other.
Yeah,
and that's typical of this fixture. It's the most fiendishly difficult fixture to call in the history of the Six Nations, Wales, Ireland.
Well, then let's go back to kind of a more macro point. We had Felix Jones on the show on Friday night pre-game, and that guy's going to be a really good coach. Like, he obviously is mad into the evolution of the game and all that kind of stuff, just even from
smart lad too.
Yeah, from our very short conversation with him on Friday night. But he was talking about how all the stats show that Ireland are changing the way they play, and that they obviously get access to advanced stats that maybe some of us don't, even in the media. I guess it's part of the RFU stuff trickling down. And he was just talking about how much we pass the ball inside our own 22, the metres that we've made, the offloads that we've made, and how it's a sea change really from 18 months, 2 years, 3 years ago as well. So is there a possibility that we're kind of stuck in between styles at the moment, and that's where this execution issues are coming from? Because there isn't as much clarity in their head as, say, there was in the World Cup in the France game when they had their full team. And it's a team, okay, so maybe France aren't as good as Wales, but actually they knew exactly what their game plan was. It was very straightforward compared to a little bit of what they're trying to do now. That's kind of the benefit of the doubt that I'm giving them about the lack of execution and also the predictability that we saw at the weekend. And maybe I'm being too kind to them.
Yeah, I just don't think we can afford to make those mistakes. I don't think our game plan is able to take them.
Is the game plan evolving, though? That's kind of the fundamental.
Well, it's very hard to say it was evolving the other day. It didn't look like it was. You know, there could be stats or damned stats or anything to try and back that up or throw that in the rocks. But you can just say from looking at it, it doesn't actually matter because it didn't work. You know, and the only stat that really counts is the win at the end. And you say all the time that the performance is what you're trying to go and get. And I think we can be honest and say because of those mistakes, the performance isn't at the level that we would want. And so that performance didn't lead to the win. But I can understand that you do horses for courses and you change and you do things differently for different games. I think, oh, that's fully fine and appropriate. I would have looked at the game and said, I felt for Johnny Sexton, actually, in the game. I felt he got smashed a couple of times. But I also feel he was trying every single trick in the book. And for me, he was trying every trick in the book, and he needed somebody else to help him with that. And a couple of other guys put their hands up. And I just felt at times it looked like it was Johnny trying to do everything. And that can be a lonely place in an international rugby field where you have the drive, the accuracy, the passion to do it as Johnny Sexton has. And it, for me, it felt at times he was the only one pulling the strings. And that's tough. And that's tough for 80 minutes.
Is that why Jarrad Payne is likely to come in to the centre to be another playmaker, to give him some...
I'm not sure that he will, but he'll definitely come back into the mix. I just can't work out whether it's going to be 13, 15 or 23. He certainly would provide that alternative playmaker role like Zeebo provided for that final try to win the match against Australia. It would certainly take some of the heat off Johnny Sexton. You know, you have Johnny Cross kicking at Liam Williams for Keith Earl to go up against Liam Williams in the air, like, and you've got Tommy Bowe on the bench. You know, I don't know how many times, if you chucked 50 balls in the air towards Liam Williams and Keith Earls, how many Keith Earls would win, but it's safely say Liam Williams would be in the majority. He's one of the best players in the air around. As Keith said, that's because Johnny Sexton was just straining every sinew and trying every trick he had in the book, and he played very, very well in lots and lots of ways. But certainly to have a, you know, you see England, they've got George Ford and Owen Farrell there. Most of the best sides in the world now have two playmakers, and I could see Payne, whether Payne is ready enough to start. He's been out for 4 months and has played Pro 12 games against Zebre and Treviso. Is that really going to ready you for a start against England? Well, that's their call, and that's where you've got to allow. Joe Schmidt is an excellent judge of these things, as are the other coaches there, and they're watching Payne train for the last 2 weeks. And they'll know how well Rob Kearney's going. He's had his injury issues. Keith Earls didn't train early the week, so you know the selection is based on stuff that we don't see. It's behind closed doors.
Yeah, England are only 2 points favourites for this game. I'm surprised. I kind of thought that they would have been 5 or 6 points. Mm. So obviously people aren't overreacting to
the bookies aren't anyway.
The Scotland
game. Ireland were 1 point favourites a week ago.
For this game?
Yes.
Okay, so it's a 3-point swing. It's quite a lot. In these terms, to move the line that much, it's quite a lot. I would make them slightly stronger favourites heading into this game, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, they've won 18 matches in a row. They've shown that they complete jobs. They were 2-0 up away to Australia. Ostensibly, the third test was a dead rubber. They went and completed the job very, very efficiently and clinically. They'd won the title a year ago, I think I'm right in saying, before they went to Paris looking for the Grand Slam. They completed the job. And they seem to have really hit their straps. That performance last Saturday was by some distance their best so far. You know, you compare and contrast with Ireland. They have two playmakers. They also have an array of strike runners. Jamie Joseph, Elliot Daly, Jack Nowell, Anthony Watson to spring from the bench. I personally think that when it comes to the World Cup down the track, if England are going to win the World Cup, they'll probably end up with Anthony Watson at full back. You remember how he played for Bath against Leinster. You've seen him play there for Bath. He just, I think, adds a bit more than Mike Brown might do in a creative sense in terms of his support trailers and so forth. But it's a fairly electric mix when you add in their wonderful lines of running and the precision of their passing. I would have thought England aren't thoroughly entitled to be favourites. That being said, I would expect a really big reaction from Ireland and a big performance from them. It's the Aviva Stadium. You know, we were talking about the mistakes Ireland made under pressure, the mistakes Ireland made. That comes from being under pressure as well, being behind the scoreboard, being away from home, the Six Nations. All the home unions did really well, as did France and Italy last November. They all played every match at home. Now, the last 2 years, England are the only side that's won away from home outside of Rome. This will complete their clean sweep over 2 seasons. They've won in all the other 4 capital cities. I think they're definitely entitled to start favourites.
Yeah, Keith, are England going to win?
Oh, I'm hoping absolutely not. I think a lot of things have to go our way. And I do think we'll get a reaction. I do think we'll be focused. And I also think when you're away from home, you definitely kick your points. I know I'm labouring that point, and I know I am, because points are very hard to come by. And slightly different at home, but I'd like to see that mixed up a little. I think an awful lot would have to go right for us. And look, there's no way England are going to be given the freedom that they got against Scotland. It was like a training session for the first half. It really, really was. It was poor international fare from Scotland. We're not going to give them that space over the weekend. I think it'll be tight. Everything would have to go our way for us to win.
First try is key. Remember I said it last week, Wales get a try, previous form goes out the window because you're at home. Ireland get the first try, it's a new ball game.
Yeah, I'm worried about this. I think that there is a possibility that England do come up and just annihilate us in a bunch of different ways that we haven't seen this Ireland team be beaten. And I'm not saying that they're going to beat us 40 points to 10, but like it could easily be a 2-try difference between the teams. No?
No, don't think so.
No prospect of that?
Of course, there's always that chance. Yeah, they're playing so well at the moment, but no.
And we haven't found form in this tournament, really.
Yeah, I think that prospect raises its head more from injury than from anything else. And one thing we didn't talk about was, and we're talking about Johnny Sexton doing an awful lot on his own, his partner in crime, Conor Murray, was, you know, played for 7 or 8 minutes.
Yeah, that was really bad. Coaching.
No, not at all.
Come on.
Not at all. You have to give him every chance.
He's got a left rubber arm where he can't even pass properly off it.
I've had that injury, so I've had most injuries in fairness. Now, thankfully, they're all consigned to the past. But you get a stinger, your arm will go a bit flaccid, and it either comes back or it doesn't come back, and it comes back very, very quickly. who would you like to keep on the field? Would you like to keep Conor Murray on the
field? But then over the halftime break as well, and it still isn't back?
Give him a break and then see how it goes. And it didn't go. So they gave him all the time for him to get back.
I don't know. I think
Conor Murray is such an important player. You have to do that.
But Marion's okay. Like, the whole point of having a squad is that you use the players when you need them.
But, you know, Conor Murray is one of the... We've got a world-class half-pack pairing.
Look,
I get
it.
So you do everything you can to keep them on the pitch.
Absolutely, yeah. But at some point, somebody has to make the decision for him and say...
And they did.
Your left arm's a bit wobbly there. Maybe, you know, if you could wave at me here with your left hand.
Now it's just a case of any stick will do.
No. That's not the case.
It's a collage. I have played matches where I've had a stinger and you go on and it settles down after a few minutes and you play out the rest of the game. And hopefully
you take the line out one armed and everybody goes, hang on a second, hit him on the arm. Right, we've got to leave it there.
Okay.
You're not winning that one. Keith, great stuff, Jerry. Thanks a million for that.
Cheers.
The French expert in the show yesterday predicted a 3-1 Monaco win. It's currently 2-0. We're going to get the thoughts of Kev next.
Off the ball.
Get all the best bits at newstalk.com/offtheball.
Newstalk 106 to 108.